talking dickheads, dreaming about a premiership cup. We love our clubs, but they never win. Two flags in 100 years.
The shithouse. Charlie, the Bulldogs have got two flags now.
That was 2 years ago, mate. Get over it.
If you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched, we're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
It is a Friday, April 27th. Welcome to Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL podcast. My name is Will Anderson.
My name is Charlie Clawson, and we've hit the ground without doing our warm-up. We have we arrived at the ground, we just bolted over the fence and jumped on. We're basically pulling on our jerseys as we're getting to our positions.
Well, basically what has happened, Charlie, is the team bus broke down on the way to the venue, and we've got there a little bit late. We haven't had a chance to have a kick-to-kick on the ground beforehand. We haven't had any inspirational speeches from the coaches.
Yeah.
We are on a time limit. We're recording this on the day. Obviously, we're hoping to get this up before the next round or while the next round is starting. It's been a hard week this week because of the extended AFL season. The final game of the round wasn't until Wednesday. So we're on a time limit, and let's just get into it.
We really needed a Peter Hudson type chopper service to operate for us in this instance. You know that story about Peter Hudson getting the 71 grand final in a chopper?
Well, I mean, I like to think that Nat Fyfe is 2018's Peter Hudson. And I think if we'd been recording this episode, obviously, over in Western Australia, we could have got Nat to come and pick us up on the way to the podcast and drop us off. But unfortunately, we don't have access to Nat Fyfe, who, let's just get it out at the start of the podcast, guys, is really good again.
Yes.
Nat Fyfe, really good again. I'm gonna say it out loud. I'm going to say something different in this podcast. I'm going to nail Frio fans out there who've been waiting, going, obviously, Frio belted the Bulldogs. There'll be a comprehensive breakdown of that entire game as Will and Charlie go down it blow by blow and highlight all the wonderful Fremantle players who played so well on that day. Nat Fyfe's still really good. Let's move on.
I have nothing to add to that. I really tried to focus on all the other footy podcasts I listened to this week when they talked about Frio to see if some of the names would stick in my head, because they were all talking about how great Frio are and Ross Lyons doing such a great job regenerating them and stuff. And they talked about Nat Fyfe playing well and Sandilands is back in good form. And then the only other thing I could remember is like Stephen Hill's back to a flank instead of like a midfielder. And there's a rookie listed guy or like a late draft pickup who's doing pretty well off a halfback flank.
Apparently comprehensive. Comprehensive coverage of Fremantle.
Apparently he's number one in one percenters. So that's good. Go Frio.
There you go, Frio fans. Nailed it. That's what you wanted. That is the comprehensive deep dive on the Frio list that you've all been requesting.
Yeah, we're the Daily Mail of footy podcasts. We just take other people's stories and just repeat them on this show as if they're ours. And not even get the facts right.
Just the gist of the original article.
So what do you think of the extended round? Have you been a fan or is it too much?
Oh, I like it, I got to say. I mean, I must admit the fact that I also got Wednesday off the radio, which was nice coming off the back of touring. The midweek break, I've got to be honest with you, I was, thank God for the diggers. You know, Charlie, I didn't get up for the dawn service because I think I normally get up at dawn. So I think the diggers would have liked me to have a lie in that day, have a bit of a rest. I love the midweek footy, but it does mean that by the time you get to the weekend, you're like, oh God, we've just been playing footy for 2 weeks, basically.
I think they need to go further. This whole thing about a 3-day turnaround for like Collingwood and Richmond and stuff, I reckon they should have the Friday night game. I reckon give them 24 hours to recover.
Or while you've got 90,000 people at the MCG, just bring out another team. Go back to back.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Collingwood are already like up and about. You know, they're ready to go. The winner of the game immediately plays the next team they're meant to be playing straight afterwards.
Yeah, it's like a pool table in a pub. You keep the table. Every win, you keep the table.
When it keeps the table and the two other teams that you might be up against, you know, depending on who the winner is, are both there at the ground, ready to go, and they both have to prepare and be ready to go. They've got their 20 cents on the, you know, corner of the oval on the boundary line, and they're ready to be up next.
Yeah, but no warm-ups. Like a Two Guys, One Cup episode, they should be in the stands ready to go, but there's no warm-ups. They can't stretch, they can't get their skills going, just to level out the exhaustion that the team holding the ground has.
I love it, Charlie. In fact, we have them in two blimps above the ground. You have both sides in two blimps, and there's like, you know, one sort of, and they have to actually go down a rope onto the ground to start playing.
Well, I think we just honour the AFL's past, and we have them in two Angry Anderson-style Batmobiles at either ends of the ground. How about this? So Collingwood wins, Essendon leave the field, then the two other teams in the wings charge out at full speed, like Mad Max Fury Road style, in those cars, and they smash like Demolition Derby, and whoever is still standing into that gets to play in the next game.
I like it. It might play havoc with the injury toll and the draw. So I'm going to suggest Batman-style blimps. Let's combine it. So you have the blimps done up like the Angry Anderson Batmobile. You have two of them.
It's 2018, of course. Like, you got to take it up a notch.
Exactly. AFLX style. And so you have two blimps, Batmobile blimps, bat planes, up above the ground, and they're ready to go at any stage. What happens is they start playing the next game, and when the ball is bounced, the players are allowed to emerge from the blimp. So that's Collingwood's advantage, right?
Yeah.
They get to start with all their players on the ground, but they're exhausted having just played a game. The other players are in a blimp above the game, and then it's up to them how quickly they get onto the ground. So you can either go the mode of getting one down a rope one at a time, the safety method, but then you're like 1-on-18, 2-on-18 for a considerable period of the first quarter. Or you've got them all in parachutes and they're just jumping out of the blimp into their position.
Well, I think if you go the zip line route, like you're dropping ropes out of the plane, you take your ruckman and like baby koalas, you get as many like forward pockets and small forwards and small defenders onto his back. So at least, I mean, I reckon Aaron Sanderlands could at least get Michael Walters, Hayden Ballantyne, Stephen Hill, a few of those smaller kind of midfielders. He could get like at least five players. So at least you've got a midfield. In fact, most midfields would be that proportioned, right? You've got the big ruckman, then you've got some sort of mid-sized midfielders. Where you're stuffed is if you're like Sydney or the Bulldogs, where you've got the prototypical utility midfielder like a Bontempelli or a Josh Kennedy, too big to get on the ruckman's back.
Yeah, exactly. Bontempelli's been carrying the team enough. He doesn't actually have to carry them down out of a blimp onto the ground. But I like your idea, Charlie. You send down Sanderlands first. He holds the rope.
Yeah.
And then the other players climb down the rope and climb over Sandy onto the ground.
I can see why people tune into this podcast for insightful football commentary.
Yeah, I'm glad we're getting this up before the next round so that people can really get informed tips in for the weekend.
So how do you feel after the Bulldogs' performance?
It was shit. What's the matter? You all right?
I had a headphone issue. No, I read your lips.
You've managed to lose your volume. I don't know what just happened, Charlie.
Can you not?
Now I can't hear you talking.
Hang on. Can you hear me now? Hang on.
We've lost the audio, says Mike Hell, which is a fancier version of me saying, I can't hear you talking.
Can you hear me now?
Either that or I've gone deaf. I can't hear you now, but I could read your lips going, can you hear me now?
Okay.
Turns out that I can read lips. I wasn't aware that I could already read lips, but
how's that?
If this podcast, this podcast has turned into the movie A Quiet Place. Charlie has monsters surrounding him in my apartment, and he has to be completely silent for the rest of the podcast. Okay, there's been a technology issue. He's called for a change of boots. He's going to have to go to different headphones. He's turning them on right now. He's putting them back on his head. Do we have you back, Charlie?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, Charlie. Hello.
Okay. All right. Sorry, we're back. We had to sub in a new set of headphones. A pair of headphones break down on me in the first quarter.
Yeah, look, that is you've worn the wrong shoes. Basically, you've worn the molded soles, and the conditions need some screw in stops. Essentially, you've started the podcast, and the commentary team are like, "This is they're slipping over the place. This is a terrible start." They've clearly, you know, who I blame for the start of this? The boot starter. This was clearly the boot starter's responsibility to have you having a fully charged pair of headphones to use for this podcast.
Well, the problem was I put in the old school analog style headphones with the short stops, and I really should have gone for the longer ones.
Yes, exactly.
So Bulldogs. Now, my feeling on the Bulldogs is that I was really bullish, no pun intended, after the last couple of weeks. I'm like, oh, you know what? As long as they put in that kind of performance, they're going to beat more teams than they lose to. But here's this thing about this league and this competition at the moment. And every coach says it, it's a cliche, but it's so true. If you are the slightest bit off, if you do not bring that manic pressure to every game, you're going to get slaughtered, especially against good teams.
Well, what I was going to say, Charlie, is you are absolutely right, which is that idea that, you know, the Bulldogs will be competitive if they bring that level of competitiveness to each game, but they didn't. It got lost on the Nullarbor somewhere on the flight over. They lost that level of desire. I don't know if you saw this story that Petrarca is out this weekend because his dog bit him on the hand. Yet another AFL dog-related out, out with rabies. It's a full moon this weekend and it's very tough for him to play because he might turn into a werewolf.
I mean, that's got to be a record for any professional sporting organisation to have, like, out because of dog bites. There's been, what, at least two this year or two in the last 18 months? De Goey was a fake dog.
De Goey had a dog-related accident. There was a dog vomit-related accident by one of the players, I know. But here's the thing. Petrarca has already had a separate dog-related out. You might not remember this, but a couple of years ago, he was playing basketball with one of his dogs and injured himself. But it was a different dog. This is his other dog. He's had a completely separate, different dog-related accident.
He was playing basketball with his dog. Is that dog Air Bud?
Air Bud, yes. When Air Bud retired, Christian Petrarca adopted him from a pound. Air Bud was going to get put down.
Demons. Demons, I've sort of fallen off the vitriol train. Like at the start of the season, I was much more enjoying like picking on them. How do you feel? Are you still enjoying this?
Yes. Yes, yes, I would say yes.
If the Bulldogs are doing better, would you?
I think I would feel like I was punching down a little bit if the Bulldogs were doing better. But I still feel like I'm punching up at the moment because the Bulldogs are going so terribly. By the way, my giant plan was that I think the Bulldogs should start biting other players. If dog bites are keeping people out, I think that should be our new tactic. Say, example, tonight, you send out whoever's got the best set of teeth down at the Bulldogs, whoever's looking the hungriest in the pregame, you send them straight to Cripps and you just get him to bite him.
Can we just take a second to talk about Tom Boyd's hair? Now, that look he's going for, like hobo chic, right?
Yeah, I like it. I'm into it.
You don't think he should have a haircut? And maybe like shave.
No, I'm into it. I think beforehand he looked a bit tall and preppy.
Right.
But now he looks a bit like, you know, I like it. A bit wild and long hair, a bit of a beard. It's got the Brody Grundy style that like is dominating the AFL. So for me, if you want to be the best, you got to model yourself on the best. And at the moment, Brody Grundy is easily the best ruckman in the league. And I like what Tom Boyd's doing. He's clearly looked at who he wants to be. And he's modelled his game on their game. Well, at least his look on his look.
In the game, the Freo Dogs game, when Cam McCarthy and Tom Boyd run the ball together, you could sort of freeze frame it and go, well, we're doing a remake of the Beverly Hillbillies. Like, they are two very white trash looking dudes at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think McCarthy probably is a bit more actually white trash.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think McCarthy probably looks at Tom Boyd and goes, you're a pretender, mate.
You know? Yeah, I feel, I mean, Tom Boyd's look does have the feeling of a private school guy who's second year uni and decides to grow his hair out and, you know, do gender studies or something like that. Just kind of change his whole kind of preppy look.
Yeah, essentially what Tom Boyd's looking forward to this year is like he really wants to be good in September and people are like, oh, that's fantastic. You want to play finals? And he's like, no, I'm going to Burning Man.
Or maybe he's just trying to work out, do people like me just for my money? Maybe if I take the appearance of a homeless person, when people meet me, they won't immediately go, oh, this guy probably does well for himself. And so he gets to know if people love Tom for who Tom is, not for the money.
Oh, you think he's doing a little bit of undercover boss?
Yeah, totally. it's the new draft picks when they come to the Bulldogs. Because they'd turn up and they'd know, well, Tom Boyd's the highest paid guy at the club, but they don't really know which one Tom Boyd is. And so that's Tom Boyd's test because he's in the change rooms and maybe Tom Boyd like entraps them a little bit. He's like, you know what I hate is fat cat, rich fat cats, yuppies who get paid too much to play football. Just to see if they're like, yeah, yeah, like that Tom Boyd guy. Ha-ha! I am Tom Boyd. I'll just tear off my beard. Ah, no, sorry, it's actually a real beard. Can't tear that off. But still, you've
been undercover Tommed.
Bad Boyds, bad Boyds. What you gonna do? Look, not the same, but in the same genre.
Yeah, no, I like it. I'm into it. I'm into the look. I'm not necessarily into the way that he's playing football yet, but I'm into the look.
Are you surprised that Ross Lyon's been able to do what he's doing with this club now? Because I'm not. I've been a big Ross fan, even when people like bagged him for being too defensive and stuff and he doesn't do rebuilds. I think the dude can coach, and I think maybe we're seeing a little something happen right now. I picked Frio to make the finals last year, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, if you're talking about undercover boss, Ross Lyon would be your perfect undercover boss candidate, right? Undercover Ross. I'd love to see Ross Lyon, you know, undercover at Frio in the off season, just like there, you know, down at the, I don't know, at the Subiaco beach or something like that. And he's just lingering, you know, beachside, you know, got a beard on. He's got sort of, you know, like a different outfit on, and he's just observing the boys in their off season.
He should do it at the club in the off season. He should like get some prosthetics so people think he's the janitor. Or something, or like the boot starter, or some one of those kind of like people who's always at the club that you don't really know their name of. And he does the same thing as Tom Boyd. He goes around and tries to entrap people to bag him. He's like, yeah, and Ross Lyon's not much of a coach, is he? You know, it's not that great. Yeah, he sucks. I am Ross. Now, if I just take off this bit, oh, this is real too. Jesus, Boyd taught me all the wrong things.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea of like AFL coaches going undercover to see what the players really think of them. I think that's a absolutely brilliant plan.
Yeah, undercover Richo, you know, he's just disguised as like a St Kilda employee, and he's like, what's your impression on Richo? Yeah, positive or pleasing? It's just like, mate, we know it's you.
Down at Collingwood, Bucks is working behind the coffee bar, like, you know, barista style.
Yeah.
Seeing if any of the players are putting in extra sugar into their coffee. And they're like, that barista won't stop telling me about his top five list of movies he's seen this summer.
On the chalkboard next to the coffee machine. It's his top five list. What did you think of Texas' response against Sydney? We've been pilloried from pillar to post, or what is it? Been smashed from pillar to post?
I mean, Tex was good. Tex wasn't amazing, but in the grand narrative, you know, he got a couple of cheap goals and he played well enough. And that was probably enough for a guy who's been carrying injuries and, you know, has had a bit of pressure his way. Adelaide were fantastic. It feels like 8 months ago that game actually happened. But Adelaide, if you're an Adelaide fan, I reckon it's been a mixed start to the season. You've lost some that you definitely thought you would have won, but I would have thought going to Sydney to play the Swans at the SCG and with, like, you know, down on personnel that Adelaide were, you've got to be really proud of that victory. And as a team, that's got to be a good one for you.
Did you read Bob Murphy's article during the week about, like, the secret society, the almost mafia-type society of key forwards and retired key forwards?
No, I didn't read it. What did he say?
You should read it. Well, it's hilarious. He basically talks about, it's about the Tex Walker controversy, and he's like, when you play football and you've been around footballers enough, you understand that key forwards occupy their own space. They are very much a kind of like their own secret society, almost like the mafia. He sort of is aligning it to the structure of a mafia. Like, you've got the Don, who no one really knows who that is, but they sort of like call all the shots. And then you've got your more senior players, like your Dunstalls and your Careys and stuff. And then you've got your new line of key forwards, John O'Brown, Nick Revolt and stuff. And then they all have opinions on the new guys, the guys who are currently playing at the moment. It's a very confusing metaphor. But it makes sense when he talks about like what was going on with Wayne Carey defending Tex Walker this week. Because you saw that Kane Corns came out and said that, you know, he was disappointing or he, you know, pulled out or whatever. And then during the broadcast, Wayne Carey's like, he stuck it right up him. Like Ted Whitten style, stuck it right up him. And it's like, oh, protect your own like the Freemasons.
Well, I love the Kane Corns stuff because it turns out that Kane Corns and Tex are kind of enemies in South Australia, and they've got like an ongoing feud. So it really makes it feel a bit wrestling style. Like, I love that Cornsey, you know, comes out, and then Wayne Carey comes in and defends the key forwards. Mike Heller's put up Bob Murphy's column here. So it's got a quote from Goodfellas at the start of it. And the quote is, Paulie may have moved slow, but it was only because Paulie didn't have to move for anybody, right? The football world, just like the real world, has a system of hierarchy. We have our government, AFL, and underneath that authority are the institutions we're familiar with. From law and order, the MRP, to the unions, the AFLPA, and so on. And yes, go on.
This sounds like a Two Guys, One Cup episode. Taking football and comparing it to something else.
And yes, like many societies, we have a mafia. A bit like Ray Liotta's character in Martin Scorsese's masterpiece Goodfellas, I could never be a made guy. That's Bob speaking.
Yeah.
There are strict rules in place. The fictional Henry Hill had Italian and Irish blood, so he could never be a made guy. He could only aspire to be a worker for the mob. At 187 centimetres and playing from the flank, the football mafia would never make me a made guy. But I wanted to. I've been fascinated by them, in awe of them, my whole life. Our football mafia are not in the business of organised crime per se, although on occasion people do get whacked. But who are the mafia? Secret documents obtained by The Age have exposed this influential secret society and uncovered the structure that protects their top man, the Don, the Godfather. This organized football family are the key forwards of yesteryear. Correction, they are the key forwards who have proven themselves worthy. It's an exclusive club. He's a good writer. I will tell you that.
Yeah.
Very easy to read. I'm reading that sight unseen, and I'm a terrible reader, and it reads very well. He is a good writer. So he goes on to talk about the idea that, yes, the key forwards essentially look after each other.
So scroll to the bottom of the article. He's got a flow chart, which is like kind of like the crime family, the mafia family, and tell us who's in the...
Okay, so up the top, he's got the Don, unknown. Yeah.
Now, he does speculate in the article who he thinks it might be. I can't remember. It's like a Peter McKenna. Or no, Lee Matthews. Because he says that that would be the perfect kind of diversion. Because Lee Matthews is not a key forward. But Lee Matthews carries himself with the same confidence, ability, and ruthlessness of a key forward. Brilliant.
Well, this is
speculation.
The thing. I mean, that it makes sense, right? Lee Matthews is your classic, and I don't want to compare him to Kevin Spacey. But Kevin Spacey's character, Kaiser Soze, in The Usual Suspects... He's the guy you wouldn't suspect. He's the verbal Kent of the key forwards. But he is a guy who, you know, what did he kick? 95 goals one year playing out of a forward pocket and roving. So he's a man who can get the hard work done down at that end of the field.
Yeah.
So the consigliere, which is the next level down, Jason Dunstall, the chief, of course, Wayne Carey, the king, of course. They've all got those sort of mafia
monikers.
Jason the Chief Dunstall, Wayne the King Carey, Dermot, what's Dermot's?
The kid.
Dermot Dermy?
The kid.
Dermot the kid Brereton, yep. Well, he's not really the kid anymore, but that's one of those mafia nicknames that becomes ironic over time. Jonathan Brown.
J.
What's
B.
Brownie's name?
Brownie?
Jonathan J.B. Brown? That's not good.
Is it Brownie?
That'd be what like Jonathan Bad Boy Brown or something he'd be in the mafia.
Concrete.
And Matthew Lordo Lloyd.
Lordo? What is Matthew
Whispering
Lloyd?
Death, as they used to call him.
Matthew Lloyd, in that using that mafia analogy, would be the guy who actually works in the DA's office. Like, he's the dude who went to university and is in the system and stuff. But, it, you know, he's the Michael Cohen of the crime family.
Yeah, he's the Matt Damon.
Departed.
In The Departed. Yeah, exactly. He's the pretty boy that has been raised in the mafia family and now he's on the inside.
Yeah.
And then next level down, Nick Riewoldt, Gary Lyon, Matthew Pavlich, Matthew Richardson, Brian Taylor, Billy Brownless. There is a lot of big key forwards in the media. So then he gets to the wise guys, which is...
Well, just before you get to the next one. So I was interested with how he split those up. Like, I'm surprised that Matthew Lloyd would be higher ranked than Gary Lyon. Wouldn't you think that Gary Lyon, in terms of kind of... you know, seniority and, you know, club captain for so long and even his media standing would put him above. Lloyd's relatively new.
Yeah, but I reckon Lloyd's a bit more like your silent killer. Again, your man on the inside, the one you'd least suspect.
Ask Brad Sewell is not so silent in that game where he just absolutely bollocks him, where Alistair Clarkson threatened to kill him.
Well, that's the thing. He can put a guy down when he needs to.
Yeah.
So the next level down is your current day players, your wise guys. Tex Walker, bad boy Ben Brown, Joe Danaher, Jack Riewoldt. I mean, Joe...
Jumping Jack.
The thing about smoking Joe Danaher, he put out a hit on you, but he'd miss. He'd spray the bullet completely. Yeah, for some reason,
he always turns the gun to the side. He always goes around the corner. It's like, just shoot straight, mate.
But you know what the thing I love about Joe Danaher? When he's murdering people, still looks like he's having a real good time. Still enjoys it, you know?
Yeah. Shoots someone, then runs up to their partner and ruffles their hair and jogs off.
Yeah, Jack Riewoldt, I mean, obviously suspect because he's always hanging around with the killers. Josh Kennedy, JJK, and Jared Roughhead. Yeah, good cast.
Did Tom Boyd make the... I thought Tom Boyd made the list, didn't he?
Boyd's next line down. So you got Buddy Franklin, Tom
still
Boyd,
more.
Charlie Curnow, Tom Hawkins, Jeremy Cameron.
How does Buddy Franklin not higher? Like, wouldn't Buddy Franklin be like... He's the Frank Sinatra of the crime family. He's the one who's all razzle-dazzle showbiz, brings in the crowds... You know, he's the kind of public PR face of that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he's less a made guy, Buddy, and more like, you know, your Sinatra style, one of those like entertainers who has mob ties.
Yeah, right. That's right. So, yeah. So he benefits from being aligned with the mob, but doesn't have to do anything for the mob necessarily.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Bob. Thanks for that good 10 minutes of content for our show. We really appreciate that.
Is it worth just like scooting over all the games just sort of quickly?
Sure, let's do it.
Will Lindsay Thomas ever play another game of football?
Yes, and he'll probably do something stupid and everybody will hate Lindsay Thomas again. I feel a bit bad for Lindsay Thomas, but he's just clearly one of those...
You have a soft spot for him.
Everybody says he's a really nice bloke in real life, but the minute he gets on the football field, he just makes stupid decisions.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the running past the ball. Like, I think in a contest, you can be a dude who just knocks people out because you play aggressively. But when you see a dude go past the ball, and then also the damage he does as well. Like, when he hits people, they stay hit.
I mean, that is the one thing you got to say about him. He's effective. In fact, I think often he's convicted by his own effectiveness. Plenty of people run past the ball and try to, you know, bump someone or whatever. But every time Lindsay Thomas seems to get someone, they stay down.
It should be like ice hockey where you get a goon in your team, like Hawthorn have James Sicily, Dees have got Tom Bug, you know, the Port have got Lindsay Thomas now. So it should be a thing that those goons can come smash people, but only other goons. Because that's what we want. We don't want to see a Selwood brother getting knocked out by Lindsay Thomas, but I'd love to see James Sicily get knocked out by Lindsay Thomas.
I mean, it would be a great added spectacle to the game for those who still enjoy a bit of like old-fashioned violence in the game, that if each team nominated one goon per game and who could only be attacked by the other goon. So goon on goon crime is fine, but otherwise it is completely unfair. It's also an opportunity for players who are less skilled but who are more goony to have an opportunity at the highest level.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we unofficially do that anyway. You'll bring in a player to mark another player, tag him or whatever, and he's just meant to scrag and scrape and stuff. Well, let's just go one step further. I guess the only problem is how many goons, because there's 18. How many goons do you get in a team? I reckon you should get one, maybe one per line or one per field. So forward, middle, back. Three goons.
No, I reckon you get one goon. We've got to cut out the violence like a lot. And I want you... Goon-on-goon opportunities to be... Yeah, you don't want goon-on-goon at all times. You want just like once or twice a game to be some really great goon opportunities.
But don't you think
every club needs like two goons on the list. On your overall list, you need one guy in the twos, you know, doing some...
Goony
back
stuff.
In the VFL, doing some VFL gooning, getting ready in case your main goon is hurt.
I just think, though, if you have three on each line of the play, then it just means... there's more chance for goon-on-goon action in every play. So think about it. It doesn't necessarily affect the healthy players or the good players or the skillful players, and doesn't necessarily affect the game, because you can still have a ball up And then you got two idiot goons just like punching on in the fourth pocket. It just sort of doubles the value for money.
I mean, yes, but you can have that regardless. I mean, if your goons are really into just gooning on.
But then like, they have to follow the ball around. They get exhausted.
No, but they could like Pagan's Paddock style. You could just have like, well, the ball's down the other end. For the crowd who are down in the goal square down the other end, you could have the goons just punching each other.
In fact, that makes perfect sense. They don't look. Let's add one player to a team now. So there's 19 players on the field. So there's the traditional 18 aside, but there's a goon on each side, and wherever the ball is not, they have to run to and just fucking goon about. Either like, and if you don't like the violence in junior leagues and stuff, the gooning can be clowning. They've got to do tumbles and pratfalls and stuff. Just generally act like doofuses for our entertainment. And then when we get to professional level, they can get goony.
Well, I like the idea too, Charlie, of this, like there'd be a professional wrestling element to it depending on week to week. So often you might have like, say, two teams coming up against each other where there's some genuine hatred between the goons. So all bets are off. You know, it's full on hardcore gooning. But then there's, and that's your kind of Fury Road version, your bleak future of gooning. But there's also like a more sort of pantomime, you know, Thunderdome version of gooning where the two goons kind of do a more professional wrestling style, put each other down but not really hurt each other sort of arrangement.
Yeah, I think depending at the level of the competition stuff, because you can't have it in amateur leagues and stuff where they don't have proper safety and doctors and stuff. But definitely at the top AFL level, it's proper gooning. And you can have like heritage rounds where you bring out like David Rees-Jones and Rodney Grinter, and they can just go like toe-to-toe gooning about where the ball isn't.
I mean, I like that. I like the Legends match. It's a real opportunity to bring back some, you know, some history of the club, some heritage, and let the goons just be who they always wanted to be, which was goons.
Campbell Brown against Robbie Muir. You can have like your all-time favourite lineups.
Mate, Campbell Brown would play for another 20 years.
So where do you put Geelong? Can you get a beat on them? Are they good? It feels like they're good, but I don't know.
Charlie, as you would know from my tips of Geelong not making the eight last year or this year, I never can get a beat on Geelong. I have no idea. They're one of those teams that just keep... I mean, look, they've been without some players. Their top end's really good. I don't know. It's like, it's just hard to tell where they're at. I think they're probably good still. I'm going to say Geelong are probably good and, you know, this is an aberration and they'll be fine again. They play so many games in Geelong and they're going to be hard to beat there.
Yeah, but they don't feel premiership-y, do they? Like they don't. They feel still short of like Richmond, GWS, you know, even like the West Coast Eagles.
But yeah, I agree.
Did they beat the Eagles? Did they beat the Eagles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's not try to pretend that we know what has happened this round, let alone in previous rounds.
Did you see any of the Carlton West Coast game?
No, I did not. But I heard Carlton were a bit better. And I heard Cripps was really, really good. That's the seems to be the word out of that game is that Cripps, you know, he's had a couple of really fantastic games of football this year. And I think that he's probably going to play more good games than he does bad games.
Harry McKay finally got into the side, kicked four goals. Or McKay, one of those two things. You know, my favourite phrase to describe a player from a club is cult hero. Like, who decides on that? Who is your cult hero? Who is the dog's cult hero? Is it JJ? Because they're hair?
That's an interesting question. Who is our cult hero? I think that there's a bit of cult hero to Redpath. Certainly, he's one of those guys that seems to be a bit of a fan favourite.
He's the barometer. Don't confuse your cult hero with your barometer. Two very different.
Oh, I don't know.
Who's your most electric, mercurial player? It would have been Stringer. He would have been your cult hero before he left.
Yeah, I think that Stringer probably was. Maybe we're without a cult hero at the moment. That's maybe part of the problem with the Dogs.
I don't know who the Saints cult hero was. Josh Bruce was our cult hero for a while when he used to take more marks and
play.
Sort of be that.
When he used to play in the seniors. When he used to...
But I don't know. He's not our cult. I don't know we have a cult hero either. Maybe that is the problem. Because you could look at like Hayden Ballantyne at Freo, Toby Green at GWS. I mean, Richmond, fucking take your pick. It's an entire team of cult heroes.
I mean, I'll tell you who is my new favourite Richmond player, though. Higgins. I know we talked about him before, Jack Higgins. But he was back again. And he's post. They should just interview him post-game, regardless of whether he's playing or not. He is one of the best post-game interviews. I've never heard a kid more excited to play AFL football. He took a year off footy. He took a last year off high school. Did you see this?
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, at the end of year 11, they were like, wow, there's no point keeping studying. I think your best bet, mate, is to be an AFL player and not have to add up stuff yourself. So let's have a crack at that. And he's walked straight into the premiership team and made a massive impact. And what a great character.
I followed him during the draft last year. I read all the articles on him and stuff. And the only knock on him was his size. Like, they were saying if he was a bigger player, he would have been top five for sure. But I feel like he's one of those players, a bit like when you got Caleb Daniel. When your team is humming like that, you can take a little dude like that and it just makes you that much better. But I think for a team like the Saints or even the Bulldogs right now or Carlton or Brisbane or whatever, Jack Higgins would not be doing anything.
No, yeah, I agree with that. It's very much the icing on the cake.
Yeah, and Richmond at the moment, like, I feel like we are partly responsible for this. I feel like with our invoking of the term Richmondy and the focus that went into them last year, they're a team on a mission, which means one of two things. They're going to cement their status as an imposing finals-bound team, or the best of Richmond is yet to come. But it doesn't feel like it.
No, it's like, you know what it feels like now? We feel like people at the end of the last Star Wars movie when it said that there was no, what's the name of the girl? Is her name Rey? Is that her?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Rey in Star Wars.
Farron. That her parents, Farron Rey, I believe.
Farron Rey, yeah. And that her parents were just ordinary people. And like all the hardcore Star Wars fans were like, oh, I wanted like Obi-Wan Kenobi to be her dad. And he had a baby with C-3PO and that's who her real parents are.
What crazy slash fiction is that?
And I think there's some hope that in the final one, J.J. Abrams will throw that out the window and you'll actually get the reveal that her parents are someone from the Star Wars universe. So I think we're hoping. We're like those Star Wars nerds who can't accept that the truth is that her parents were just ordinary people and the Force can be in everybody. We're just saying Richmondy can't be over. There's going to be a return to Richmondy. There's going to be more to this story.
Yeah, or we're like the guys who went to high school with a dude that we used to pick on. We used to bully this guy. And then 2 years later, he invents Facebook and becomes this billionaire. And we still think that because we knew him when he was a geek, we have something over him somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like, we knew you at high school. And he's like, yeah, I know everything about you. I have all your data. I can see which websites you've been visiting. So how you like those apples?
It's a guy who at high school, his nickname was like Skid Marks or something. And no matter how high he gets in life, no matter what position he attains, every time we see him, we're still like, hey, Skid Marks. And he's like, I'm the Prime Minister of Australia. Shut up, Skid Marks. You'll always be Skid Marks to us. Richmond is Skid Marks.
I think Richmond are the real deal. Doesn't mean that they're going to win the whole thing, but I think they're going to be in the mix to win the whole thing if they keep playing the way they're playing.
It's such a lesson at the moment with the way Collingwood's going and Buckley and Hardwick with Richmond last year, how you've got to kind of stay the course with these coaches, don't you? Because these, Bevo didn't really have enough time in the position to have people doubt him, but it's so easy to freak out when your team is playing really badly and just to want to hit the reset button. But I think there's something to be said by letting a dude kind of actually, maybe it takes long for some coaches to impose their game plan on a team or a list?
Or get the list in place that suits the game plan that they have.
That's right.
Have the amazing run with luck. I mean, the other thing with Richmond is they've had an incredible run with injuries. And so they've been able to put their best team out on the field pretty much every week. If they manage, if say, for example, Alex Rance does a hamstring or Dusty's out for a couple of weeks, then suddenly you might see a very different Richmond, but they've been very lucky at the moment that they've had this kind of great uninterrupted run with injuries.
It seems to go hand in hand though, doesn't it? Like, maybe it's correlation or causation or whatever, but when you're playing well, like that's what seems to happen is like you seem to escape those injuries and the ball bounces your way. Like when you're up and about, there's something to that momentum that just carries you forward. Like I remember when St Kilda were playing finals and stuff, it was like that. You know, you could drop half your list to rest them, and because you're just so kind of confident and positive, you just go out and every player is desperate to kind of get into the team. So, or like Hawthorn of the last fucking 5 years, you know, they just bring it.
Whereas if you're going like Melbourne is going at the moment, you lose your best player because his dog bites his hand.
I mean, where do you, is it too early to start making, I mean, who's definitely not making the finals? Carlton, Brisbane,
Carlton.
St Kilda?
Carlton, Brisbane, St Kilda, definitely not. There you go. That's about it though, right?
Yeah, but you're only 2 points in front of us.
Oh, yeah, but by the way, the Bulldogs have got to start winning some games or they'll be so far behind that regardless of how they play, they won't make the finals. But you still kind of have that, you know, North Melbourne, the Bulldogs, you know, Gold Coast, all those teams where you're going, none of those will probably make the finals either. But at the moment where they are, there's still kind of a chance that at their best, if they got a run on, they could probably make the finals. And then you've got that next group of, well, Essendon, who've been terrible, you know, compared to what everyone thought they were going to be. Melbourne and Collingwood probably, you know, those sort of teams where you're like, okay, maybe these teams won't make the finals, but they'll be around about the finals.
How many hours of radio did you devote to Brendan Goddard this week?
You know what? It's funny because the boys weren't very harsh on Goddard, to be honest. Mm. Like, they were all a bit like, well, he was just giving them the feedback that they clearly needed. Like they were going terribly and he was yelling at them because they were going terribly. The problem with BJ is that he's so demonstrative and he just doesn't look inspiring when he's giving someone feedback. It always looks like he's being really, really mean to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, in Nick Riewoldt's book, I think the term he uses to describe Brendan Goddard is psycho. He talks about their plan, I think, in 2009, if they won the grand finals. Well, when they were playing finals, they had a set routine where they would go to Nick's place. Nick's girlfriend or wife then, Catherine, would make them dinner, the same dinner. They would have to go in through the same door. And they had this plan that, you know, they'd do this every time up right into the grand final. And I think they walked in the door one day and Catherine hadn't got, like, the right utensils or the plates were in the wrong spot or whatever. And Brendan freaked out and made Nick leave the house so they could go through the whole routine again and make sure it was exactly right.
I mean, that is psycho.
Yeah. Obsessive compulsive. If Brendan Goddard was in a cop show, he'd be one of those idiosyncratic detectives. The overreacting detective.
Yeah. He's the overreactor. That's really what he is. He's the guy who always has to get pulled off by the other cops. Hang on, I said that wrong. To calm him down. BJ's at it again, guys. Someone's going to have to pull him off.
Before the cops do. I mean, off the other guy. I mean, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I feel like Essendon are just, they haven't woken up yet. You look at their list and you can't imagine that they won't turn it around. They just need to kick up the ass or something. Like St Kilda had started the season the same way, like really sluggish in the first four rounds. As soon as I watched that Hawthorn game, in the first 2 minutes, I could tell that we were switched on. There's just something about the body language, the appetite for the contest, the little things they do. And I just think, I don't know, some teams that they just get sleepy. Or maybe unless you have 100% buy-in from your entire list, it makes everyone look bad.
Yeah, I agree. So the St Kilda thing, how did you feel about the draw? I mean, as a St Kilda fan, because I quite like a tie, like, you know, I like a draw, but
when
as
you're
a
playing
St Kilda fan, I don't mind. I don't mind a tie. In general, I don't, like, there's been a lot of people this week kind of going, let's get rid of the tie. Let's play golden point or extra time or whatever. But I think it's one of the, like, idiosyncrasies of the game, and I quite like a tie. But as someone who has had a tie haunt your nightmares, is it hard? Maybe St Kilda shouldn't. Maybe it, like, every other game still can have a tie, but if the Saints are playing, they go to extra time.
Well, there's some weird stat that I think it's like the last five St Kilda and GWS have played in 4 out of the last 5 tied games. So I am very familiar with them. It was the same as what you were saying about the Bulldogs last week, which was, oh, the effort's great. Like, if they play like that, that's the thing that was driving me away from the Saints for the first 4 weeks, is I didn't want to front up and watch that. Like, I'm quite willing to watch my team if they have a fucking crack, even if they go down. You know, so in that last quarter, we were 3 goals down. It looked like GWS were going to run away with it. And I was like, okay, you know, I've seen good football. And then to get so close, and it was just like, I was screaming when Jack Stevens, you know, bolted down on the wing, 8 seconds to go. They cut to the wide shot. I see Carlisle's like 20 metres in front of Phil Davis. And I'm like, and then just from that fucking, and Carlisle too, who's got the stickiest hands. I mean, if you're going to pick one player in the entire team to kick it to, it would be Jake Carlisle, but no, oh well. So I don't know. Like, I feel like the season has started from round 4, 5. Like, we're ready to go now. I've just forgotten the last 3 weeks. If we bring that effort against the Hawks in Launceston, I'll be okay.
I think it's good to see St Kilda have at least a good positive. Well, positive? Did Richo find it positive and pleasing, or did he find it disappointing?
Did you not see Richo in the vision of Richo in the box in the last 15 seconds of play is fantastic? Because Richo, normally very reserved guy. He was screaming. And you saw him pump the arms when he saw like Carlisle that take the grab, and then the arms drop, and then he screams for a free kick like he's sitting in the animal enclosure at Moorabbin. It's amazing. Like, I would love to see Richo lose it. Like, he keeps it all under wraps so much. I'd love them to mic him up in one of those games.
Yeah, I would like to. I think there's a bit of Incredible Hulk about him. You know, by day he's sort of mild-mannered Bruce Banner, you know, trying to keep things, you know, sort of, but you don't want to make him angry. You're not going to like him when he's angry.
Well, Ross Lyon was a bit like that. And I remember seeing some vision of Ross Lyon at training. I don't know if it was with Freo or the Saints, but it was Ross Lyon actually on the field, and he was trying to tell one of his defenders how to place a block. And he's like, sort of like, you know, speaking... It's quite heated. And he's like, you know, you don't just let him go. You stand through. And he goes up and shoulder blocks this player and knocks him like 4 feet backwards. And it's like, oh, holy shit. Like, Ross Lyon presents like your drunk uncle. But you know that when it comes down to it, people are going to listen to him. And I don't know if Richo has that side. I've never seen it.
Any other games that we need to cover off before we, because we should get to the tips soonish, because I'm on a tight schedule today.
Oh, actually, there's one thing that I thought was good for this podcast I want to read out. So I went to the Saints message board, Sensational, after the draw, and just was reading a few things. And they were mainly, Saints fans, I've got to say, on the message board, were mainly positive. Mm-hmm. But there's this one post from the Linton Street Flash, who was talking about Ben Patton, who's a guy we drafted last year. And he says, can't wait to see this guy play. He's a transition specialist, apparently. But here's the key. He misspelt specialist. He typed O instead of P, so it looks like transition socialist. So the next post under that is someone saying, wow, transition socialist. Now we're talking. We have too many bourgeoisie passengers living off the hard labor of others. May Patton and his loyal band of followers usurp the primitive accumulators of possessions and thereby redirect the flow of capital to a new dynamic equilibrium wherein the class struggle produces continual revolution. Brothers and sisters, raise your red, in brackets, black and white, flags. Which I thought was awesome.
I mean, it'd be great if Richo started doing a bit of that pre-game, you know, getting out the little red book, or, you know, reading some Karl Marx to the, you know, to the boys. Like, today's all about Marx. No, not forward line Marx or back line Marx, Karl Marx.
Karl Marx. And then after that, we're going to listen to some Richard Marx. Why? No reason. I just like him.
I was Googling his stuff and he came up.
All right, let's get to next. Well, tonight, very hopefully when people are listening to this, they'll be on the tram or the train out to see the Bulldogs taking on Carlton. Must-win game. So goes without saying,
Must-win game for the Western Bulldogs. If we don't win this one, we probably don't make finals. Carlton, obviously a lot of pressure, you know, coming on Carlton, but they played a little bit better last week. I hope they play well, but not too well, and the Western Bulldogs win this one. We're still a few players down. Our barometer is out though, Charlie, so no red pass. So I mean, it'll be hard for us to tell the temperature at the game tonight of how things are going to go. Tom Boyd, no haircut, you know, is in the team still. Couple of good players back. Oh, I mean, I hope the Bulldogs win this one.
Yeah, I don't know to pick. I mean, Bulldogs are clearly the better side, but and they're traveling back from Perth, and Carlton showed good signs. Oh, I don't know. I mean, Bulldogs should win this, and I'll tip them. My instinct is telling me Carlton, but
they did have to travel back from Perth, Charlie. But the good news is they didn't really expend that much energy while they were over in Perth, so they should be nice well and rested. Fresh.
Down at the Cattery, the Cats take on the Sydney Swans.
This is an interesting game, I reckon. Sydney,
no Buddy, you know, no Hanbury.
Yeah, and Sydney just going at the moment, and Geelong at home. I'm going to say Geelong will win this one. They're pretty hard to beat down there. They're still without Ablett, aren't they? He's not back yet, but
yeah, that's right.
I would have thought that, you know.
But Geelong it is also one of those traditional Bloods type games, you know, like smaller ground. You know, not that their back's against the wall, but the odds are stacked against them. And so I could see Sydney getting over, but without Buddy, I mean, that's a big problem, and no Ree either. So I'm going to say the Cats as well.
North Melbourne take on Port at Etihad on Saturday, which is in suddenly, if you picked this game at the start of the season, you would have gone, this is just a lock for Port Adelaide. But I reckon this is North's to lose.
Haven't Port gone off the boil so quick? Like round one and two, we're like, oh, they're top four material. And now we're like, they stink.
Yeah. And obviously they had all the trouble with Powell Pepper. Adam Spencer, a good friend of the podcast, sent us a very funny Powell Pepper vocal warm-up, which in light of the incident that Powell Pepper has been involved in, I think that we should at least keep that vocal warm-up suspended for the amount of time he's suspended for games at the very least, out of respect to the situation.
North looked great. Like, I mean, they sort of took their foot off the pedal after the first quarter and let Hawthorn back into the game. But they look good. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, like an analogy we use them about being like an old Australian car or whatever. If they can keep, you know, that forward line, that spine healthy, Goldstein and weight and stuff, then they'll be all right. So I'm going to pick North.
They've got a really good back line, North, you know, and Ben Brown's obviously an A-grader now. He's established himself. And Waite is, you know, managing not to get suspended or injure himself really terribly, which is Zeebor down forwards, really fantastic. Yeah, they look all right, North Melbourne. Much better than I think anyone. I mean,
they've turned Billy Hartung into an exciting player. Like, who would have thought that? Ex-Hawthorne speedster Billy Hartung. Looks great in North Melbourne colours.
I mean, they're probably due to have a shocker. You know, like, you know, emerging teams aren't consistent, you know, normally. And they're probably due for a shocker, and Port Adelaide really need to make a statement. But I'm going to, you know what? I just feel that they've got a new batch of Shimbona spirit down at Arden Street.
Bloody hell.
And I'm going to say North.
Maybe that's a secret. Are they renovating Arden Street at the moment? Have they dug into a spring of Shinbona spirit?
Oh, are you saying that they've been doing some renovations down there and they've found a reservoir of Shinbona spirit that runs under the venue?
Yeah.
Or is there a chance that Brad Scott has got like one of those sort of water diviner style arrangements down to the club? Somebody, you know, with like a couple of sticks trying to find some yet undiscovered Shinbona spirit.
I love that. Before the game, an hour before the first bounce, you just see Brad Scott walk on the boundary line with a stick.
Brad Scott's really excited because he picked up like some props from Russell Crowe's The Water Diviner at his recent divorce auction, and he actually managed to get the two sticks that help you find Shinbona spirit.
What's the next game? Because my screen's frozen. I can't see.
GWS are taking on the Brisbane Lions at Spotless Stadium.
Jeez.
GWS win that.
Yeah, it could be tough too, right? It could be like ugly.
They need to have a really impressive victory, and at home against Brisbane, I reckon this is your classic GWS, you know, just, you know, Harlem Globetrotters, Washington
orange
Generals.
Wave. Yeah, totally. All right, GWS for me too. Down at Launceston on Saturday night, the Hawks take on the Saints. I reckon Hawthorn will be so stung from their performance against North last week, they're going to come out pretty fired up. No James Sicily, though. No Rioli.
No Poppy still. No Poppy. Rioli, I think.
Yeah. So, still a pretty good team. If we can, Burgoyne's back, if we can keep Tom Mitchell, I mean, we don't really have a recognised tagger. We can probably send like a Seb Ross to him or a Luke Dunstan or something, but I reckon we're a chance. If we play this, we beat them down there last year by almost 70 points. So I'm going to tip the Saints.
Yeah, nice one. I'm not. Hawks.
You asshole. The Crows take on Gold Coast, the Adelaide Oval. A revived Adelaide. Wouldn't it be amazing if Adelaide lost this game? It would be so fantastic.
Also, with the season that Adelaide are having, it just wouldn't shock me.
Yeah,
I feel like at the moment they're just having that real up and down start to the year, a bit like Sydney had last year. I reckon they'll warm up into it and get good, but I still feel at the moment that they've got some shockers up their sleeves. And God, I'd love Gold Coast go to Adelaide in front of 40,000 people, a sold out Adelaide crowd who've just come along to watch their team do a bit of showtime. And but I'd say Adelaide at home are going to be too strong for Gold Coast.
I'm going to pick Gold Coast. Stewie Dew is an Adelaide boy. He probably knows that ground pretty well. I'd say he's going to get him up and about for that game. I'm picking Gold Coast, and that's my lock of the week.
I reckon that's not a bad tip. You know, Stewie Dew's probably getting to town early, so I can have a pie floater before the game. He'll be relaxed. He'll be comfortable. He'll be ready to go. But yeah, I reckon Adelaide win that.
Get some chicken salt. Essendon take on the D's. Battle of the disappointing finals aspirants.
Yeah. I don't know who wins this. This is a tough game to pick, I reckon.
Melbourne have had one more day rest.
I mean, Essendon need... Yeah, Melbourne. I'm going to say Melbourne.
I'm going to pick the Bombers.
Just. Who knows? Toss of the coin. Don't know. But I'm going to say Melbourne. You know what? Melbourne need to get their season back. If they're going to be the new Richmond... They need to actually get their season back a little bit now. And I'm going to say without Petrarca, they have to lift. I'm going to say Melbourne.
Okay. The Pies take on Richmond in the blockbuster of the round. This will be, well, you know what? We'll see.
Richmond will win this. Yeah. Collingwood will be tired. It's like.
Tired. And their backs are so far from the wall at the moment. They're basically
standing. They can barely see the wall.
They're standing in the middle of the field.
They're closer to the other wall on the other side. Their fronts are almost to the wall.
I pick Richmond as well.
But if Collingwood beat Richmond at the MCG on Sunday, what I'm going to tell you is that my next week at work will be very easy.
The last game is the Derby Derby. Frio taking the West Coast Eagles. I'm going to pick Frio in this game. We talked a lot about Frio. We gave you a big pump up at the start of the episode. I'm going to bookend it. Good storytelling, just like finish as I started. I'm going to say Frio.
Well, I am going to say that the West Coast Eagles are going to win this. My new favourite team, the West Coast Eagles. And that is my lock of the week. Speaking of which, I will be in Western Australia next weekend for my own personal derby / derby. Friday night and Saturday night, I am doing my Willegal show as part of the Perth Comedy Festival. So come out and see that Friday and Saturday.
If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/tofop. We have a question and answer episode, bonus episode up on the site. So Patreon is just a way to support the show, subscription based. You can donate any amount. It's a monthly charge to your credit card or your bank account. It just helps us pay Mike Howell and everyone else who works on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And sorry, I was done. I was like, I was basically done. And I was like, this is the end of the show. I really need to go to the toilet. That's what I was thinking.
Well, I can tell people while you're going to the toilet, I can tell people to go to tofop.com to get this podcast and many other podcasts that we do together and separately. And that's about it. Play on Not 15.
Bowl. We are two guys, one car.